It's the Tarncast. The Tarncast. It's the Tarncast. The Tarncast. The Tarncast. The Tarncast. It's the Tarncast. This is the Tarncast. Well, hi, I'm Shane Nickerson, and this is the Tarncast, and Todd Anderson. Do you like using your middle name?
I'm either way.
TR? Does anyone call you TR?
No.
Tra?
Tra. Yeah, some people call me Tra. I've never been to TR, though.
Todd Robert Anderson is here, and I brought him here to, because I saw him at a party not too long ago, and it was great because... it's always good when you see someone at a party that you know, because then you have someone to talk to.
That's true.
And you don't have to look anymore for someone to talk to.
You're kind of a socially awkward party goer?
I guess I am. Yeah, I've recently discovered that. So I wanted, that's one of the reasons that you're here. I wanted your advice. You didn't seem socially awkward. You seemed happy, go lucky, talking to people without being nervous or worried that stuff you'd say would
sound
dumb.
Well, I like to get to parties early.
Okay.
You know, very early at the beginning. I show up on time for the party, and that way, when people actually start arriving, I'm already kind of drunk.
And you've already got the kind of the lay of the land.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got it figured out.
Because if I'm really awkward at parties if I haven't been drinking.
Yeah, you have to drink at parties.
I don't know if I ever, you know, have to go on the wagon. I'm probably not going to go to parties anymore.
You'll be fucked.
Yeah, I'll just stay home.
I've gone to parties sober a lot lately, and then I realized that drinking really helps.
It does.
It just really, really helps.
What kind of parties? Like business parties?
Or? No, I just stopped, for a while I just stopped drinking because I was exercising a lot, and I tend to be all or nothing. Where if I drink, I feel like I've ruined everything I've ever done. Exercise wise, so I just stop exercising.
Yeah, I have that problem too. Although lately I've been really good about drinking and exercising.
I've been trying that. It goes against my the way I'm built, because I tend to be all or nothing about things.
Well, you know, I read an interesting thing that after an aerobic, you know, workout or a jog or whatever, it's actually good for your body to have a beer.
It better be, because I do every time.
Yeah, yeah. You don't, I mean, it's probably, you know, everything in moderation. I don't think they mean have, like, drink a sixer after you jog.
The goal is not to cancel out the run. It's just a nice cherry on top of a...
But I can't remember what the science was, but a beer, whatever's in it, actually does something to help your
It does seem
body.
Like you could write an article to support pretty much anything you wanted. You could find evidence to make it cool to drink after a run.
Yeah, that's true. Or I mean, I bet like smoking a bowl too is good after a run. If your legs are sore, it takes care of the pain.
Or before a run, because then you just I do. I had friends in college that smoked pot in the morning and then went for long runs. And just I think that especially, well, I don't know about weed, but definitely beer goes with that runner mentality of just like getting addicted to a feeling.
I actually do know. I know a 50-year-old man. Who smokes pot before he does his P90X workouts.
I can't, no. That seems impossible to me.
Well, he says the trick is you smoke pot and start working out right away.
Before it really hits you.
If you sit down and give it 15, then you won't. But if you smoke, then it's, he says it's kind of fun. It's like dancing at a party. If you like smoke pot and you're into the music and you dance, it's sort of the same.
You just kind of get lost in the P90X. Having done that both things a lot, they seem to be, they should be kept separate to me.
For me, that's true, too.
Yeah, I couldn't. Because once the second I smell pot, I get hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, instantly. I mean, it's my favorite part about being high was always the food.
Yeah, food is really good.
And music.
When you're high. You know what else I really like when I'm high is scotch, which is probably a terrible combination, but scotch tastes that much better.
It really
after
does.
You
it does.
Smoke some pot. And good scotch. Yeah.
Good scotch. And you don't notice the, It's sort of, you just are all of a sudden super high and super drunk before you really understand what happened.
it's a dangerous combo, but
it is because, you know, when you get high, you're that whatever that like internal monitor is, it tells you, okay, you know what, you're full now. You don't need to keep eating. That gets shut off. So you just keep drinking scotch like it's a treat that your mouth needs
instead of popcorn.
Exactly.
You could have popcorn or ring dings or something, you're like, no, I'm going to have a scotch. And then the next thing you know, your scotch is gone.
That happens.
And you have to go to the store.
And you have to convince yourself that drinking a half bottle of scotch in a night is not that bad. Probably a lot of people do it. That really has happened to me.
This show seems to be sort of about how to justify being a terrible alcoholic and drug addict to yourself.
Well, I told you that yesterday we had a lunch. We had an interview with this guy at 1 and had a couple beers at the interview, and then went from there to another person at work. It was her birthday, so of course we went there and had a couple more beers. And then it seemed like a great idea to go get some sipping tequila. And so by the end of the day, I ended up wrestling a guy I work with on the sidewalk and had my head smashed into the concrete.
And I'm
40.
And you're 40, and the guy who smashed you was 30.
Just turned 30.
30. Yeah, that's...
I think 30 is, you can say like, fuck it, I'm only 30. Yeah, I wrestle dudes. Yeah, sometimes I wrestle dudes on the fucking sidewalk.
Yeah, they say you're not, you know, fully matured psychologically till you're like 27. So you're just past that.
Right.
So you can still cling to your youth there. But once you're 40.
Once you're 40, it becomes very difficult. I need to find someone who can write an article about why it's okay to wrestle your friends drunk on the sidewalk.
Well, yeah, I can understand it. It happens to everybody.
If you subtract alcohol or pot from the equation, and let's say, because I know that particular party, you knew the host. You know the host. He's a good friend.
Yeah, we've been friends forever.
That makes it easier. If you go to a party and you don't have alcohol, don't have weed, don't really know anyone, don't necessarily know the host, and you have to show up alone, do you get freaked? Do you panic at all?
I don't.
Not panic. Do you get worried about it?
Well, it feels awkward. I would say that. I mean, I don't think I worry about it till I get there.
Yeah.
And then if I get there,
what do you do?
Alone,
you know nobody,
sober and I don't know anybody. I'll try to. I'm so bad at starting conversations with people, and I part of my problem too is, you know, I don't follow sports, you know.
Yeah, that's a good go-to.
So yeah, and that's such an icebreaker. And these days, that with men and women, you know. So
these days, even the women are watching the sports.
The women are watching the sports. Well, it wasn't that way when I was a kid. You know, the women were in the other room knitting or something.
Cleaning.
And the guys were watching sports. They were cleaning. That's exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
In my family, anyway, they were cooking and cleaning while we watched sports. And I watched the sports because I didn't want to wind up cooking and cleaning.
Right.
But then once I was out of the house, you know. But I don't have that icebreaker, and the things that I like are really dorky.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I find the right nerd, then
you're good.
Then I'm good. But if people are really cool, because it, like, you know, at the party we were at the other night, the host, Steve, he knows all these really cool people because he's all successful now with the weeds and the Dane Cook series he's doing and all that. So he has like lots of kind of semi-famous people at his party who, like, I've admired from afar.
Right.
I'm still awkward around.
That's intimidating.
It is intimidating.
Even when they're friends that have, like, yeah, I'm sure you've been here as long. How long have you been here in LA?
I've been here 16 years, 17 years.
Me too. And you have friends that have now become super successful, and in a normal situation doesn't really faze you, but then you actually see them around other people and it's kind of weird because then they have fans and there's people coming up to them, and then there's like an extra level of awkwardness on, I don't know, LA's weird, especially parties like that, because like you said, it's a mix of people you know, people you kind of wish you knew, and then people that you're just scared to even say anything in case you say something stupid. Or maybe that's just me. Then there's also the Twitter element of, like, there's certain people that were at that party that I only know exist because of Twitter.
Oh, and now you're seeing them, and that's
have to see them, and
that's
then
that's a super weird thing too.
Yeah,
that's super weird. Yeah, that that happens to me a lot, where I at least in my mind, I develop some kind of relationship with somebody that I read a lot, and sometimes, you know, we go back and forth on a couple things, but I've never met them, and then when I finally do, because a lot of them are LA-based, it's really odd.
It's odd, especially if, like, something is, like, the voice isn't what you expected, or they just don't quite look, they don't look anything like the avatar, and you're just like, oh my god, this ruins every, like, this changes everything I imagined about you.
Yeah, we've both told stories at public school, the storytelling night at the, the M Bar. And one of the, I think her name is Allie Ward, redheaded girl who, one of the stories she told was about, you know, being like hooking up with rock stars and whatever. But it, like, according to her avatar and just her, you know, her personality on Twitter, you know, I thought she was just going to be more of a cute, like, quirky girl, and she's really gorgeous. I was like, oh no, we can't talk.
I can't approach you.
You are not. I'm going to be over in the corner with the quirky people.
These are the people I understand. I know how to relate to the other ones like me.
You're one of those. I don't deal well with beauty at all.
I don't either. I'm intimidated by talented people and by beautiful people. But ugly dipshits I'm really good with.
Yeah.
I can really handle myself.
We have a serious esteem problem, apparently. But yeah.
Apparently, at least I'm incredibly damaged, I'm finding out right now.
And the other thing that happens to me at parties like that where I stay too long
is
once I've, like, crossed the threshold from, you know, party buzz to I've had too many.
Oh, yeah.
But hopefully before I get to the point where I'm just horribly depressed.
Yes.
And talking about, you know, jumping off a building or something. but I get to the happy drunk, and then there are those people who I, you know, kind of starstruck by, and then I...
Oh yeah.
Then it's horrible because I'm actually trying to express love.
I'm sweating for you. I'm sweating because I've done it.
And it just, and then I realized when I left, I was like, I was gushing all over that poor person, and they must have felt horribly awkward.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure on some level you appreciate the love, but at the same time, I feel like so it's like there's no middle ground for me. I'm either too scared to approach or so drunk that I'm, you know, kind of stalkery.
Yeah, I've done that, and it is, it's a tough, the next morning's tough for me on those. That's I think that is the root of my fear at these parties, is like, don't do that. don't have to wake up tomorrow and face the fact that you just got a little too drunk and approached the person that you shouldn't have drunk.
Right.
But
right. But then, but the other thing is you have to approach that person. But then if I'm not lubed to the point where I'm just like falling over in love with a person, then, and I approach them, then it's just awkward.
Yeah.
I don't know what, I like your work.
then they have the look in their eye like, this person might kill me. I'm not sure.
I don't know what. Yeah.
Have you ever? Now you're an actor and a successful enough actor that people could easily recognize you and like the stuff you've done. Have you ever had to be on the other end of that where someone came up to you and?
Occasionally. Gushed? Occasionally. I don't mind it so much, but you know, most of the people who know who I am actually know who I am are other actors. You know?
Oh, sorry.
So it's a different...
Right, right.
It's a different...
But if you perform or something and you get off stage and someone comes up to you and says, and just wants to tell you how funny you are, and they're awkward, that's had to have happened before where you don't think anything of it. You're just like, oh, that's kind of nice that I make them nervous enough to be awkward.
Yeah, no, I actually kind of like it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't... I mean, I can imagine if you're like a megastar and everybody approaches you that way.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, like famous people, it's like it doesn't matter like even how respected or whatever they are, but if they're famous, it lights up a room. People just
it does
love famous people.
It's like this like a unicorn walking into a room, or like a magician in full magician regard. Like everyone's like, oh, there's something interesting in here.
It's weird, and it sucks too.
Maybe not a magician. A magician's a weird thing to I think if
yeah, I mean, I think if you met David Copperfield, you'd be like, oh, this guy's all right.
I love that the ultimate, the best magician, you'd be like, yeah, he's fine. What if you're a shitty one, man? People are just like, oh, fuck, the magician's here.
Yeah, magicians are weird. Have you been to the Magic Castle?
I have been to the Magic Castle.
I've been there a few times.
It's a fun place, but I don't... Now, this is just my personal opinion. I don't care about magic.
I'm not a big
magic guy. I think magic's pretty dumb.
My dad loves sleight of hand.
Sleight of hand is cool. It's just like the way that... juggling is cool, or something else that you have to learn.
Right, a trick.
Yeah, a trick that you learn.
Yeah,
with the cards.
Yeah, that's what he likes. He's just fascinated by that. So every time he comes to town, which isn't very often,
you have to go to the Magic Castle.
He always wants to go to the Magic Castle.
Well, at least the Magic Castle, it's a party vibe there.
It's fun.
Yeah,
it'd be cooler if there were like naked ladies and
stuff. That would be cooler.
That would be better.
Then I could get into magic.
Yeah. if there were nude magic, I'd be into. Involved in magic.
I can't think of anything I wouldn't like better if it was naked ladies.
Yes, I agree. Naked ladies are all right. Although I don't really go to those kind of clubs.
I don't either.
Sometimes I think about it. I'm like, sometimes, I'll be like, you know what I'm going to do? In the middle of the day, I'm just going to go to a strip club.
Because I can.
Nobody's going to stop me.
Yeah.
And then I don't.
I've been to them. Every time on this show that I work on, or any show I've ever worked on, whenever we're traveling, the crew always wants to find the strip bar.
Mm.
And I end up usually going, and it makes me feel so lonely. It's just such a sad... It does. It's such a sad place. Like, I feel so sad for the people there and the people on stage. It's a terrible arrangement.
It is. It is odd. And it's too bad that it has to be sad. I wonder if we weren't such a kind of Christian nation.
Mm.
And even though I know that, it's more secular than ever before, blah, blah, blah. But
yeah,
because we're our sexuality is so defined by that, and it's, sex is still kind of a naughty thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to just something people do because mm-hmm. we're biologically inclined to do it.
Yeah.
If it would still have that sad vibe.
I wonder, that's a good point. I mean, it's definitely true. Like, we're like someone made a comparison once that our whole country is like is basically an adolescent when it comes to any dealings with sex. Like, they don't want to see boobs on TV, and which is so silly.
It is, but that doesn't make any
sense. It doesn't make sense.
But TV would be so much better if there were lots of
naked
boobs.
Ladies. We are definitely discovering the secret to making everything better. And it's boobs. But I don't... To me, it isn't so much the... It's not the nudity or that there are guys that are drooling over nude women. I that's awesome. And it's the way it's set up and the people that... Like, the people you have to talk to go in are awful. And there's usually a bouncer and there's, like, a cash machine. And you can tell the strippers all hate everyone in there. Through the smile and the Kid Rock song they're dancing to, they are angry.
Well, it depends on where you go.
That's true.
I think I've only, the only LA strip club I've ever been to is Crazy Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was clear that, like, I don't know if that's a LA strip club vibe or if it was just that place and that night, but none of them were happy.
No.
They were all miserable.
Was it like a Wednesday, though, or was it a weekend?
It was a weekend. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. And I went there with a buddy and our dates.
Oh.
So we took ladies there, which is a good way. It makes it
more, a little more fun. And you feel a little bit... Excuse me. Over burp. You feel a little bit less of a piece of shit when you go in with women because it's like, they're co-signing this.
Well, and I've done that before, and in the past, not in other cities, it's always been very welcome, and the strippers are always very happy that, I've brought a woman with me, and then they give her free lap dances, but not the case at Crazy Girls.
No.
They were not impressed.
Just competition to them.
Yeah. I mean, because I went to one in New Orleans, like a fancy... This is actually a sad stripper story. We were like... Me and a couple girls that I was with, we were like, hey, let's go to a strip club. And if two women want to go to a strip club with me, I'm going to say, let's go. So, we went to Bourbon Street with all the frat boys and everything. And we went into one, like, small place that had strippers. And the woman who was stripping was clearly, you know, zonked out of her mind. And she was doing a pole dance very slowly, like really too slowly to really take advantage of centrifugal force or whatever that is. And she fell, you know, on her ass, and there was a shocked moment, and there were so few people there, and there was everybody was against the wall, and I think maybe she'd invited her friends, and they were all just sort of awkwardly watching this.
Oh, that's awful. Maybe that was it for her. Maybe she was like, I need to reevaluate.
Yeah, yeah. Because you have to choose. I mean, you have to choose something you're good at, and you certainly don't want to be a stripper if you suck at dancing.
It seems like if you're going to be a stripper, which I think is fine to do. I mean, I encourage it. that you should pick a certain number of years and just promise yourself you're out at like, okay, I'm doing this for 3, and I will not be here when I'm 42.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much choice you have there.
That's true. I went to there's a great. It's not really even a strip. Well, it is, but it's called in Atlanta, and it's called the Claremont Lounge. Mm. And it's one of those places that if you're in Atlanta, everyone asks you if you've been to the Claremont Lounge. You're like, you need to go to the Claremont Lounge. the cab drivers all know exactly where it is. It's like a staple.
Grandmas and stuff, old ladies are stopping you. Have you been to the...
every single person in Atlanta, including old ladies. No. But it's it is like this shithole that has paper Dixie cup shots and canned beer and really... really a variety of stripper, from old ladies to amputees.
That sounds all right.
Yeah, it's fun. It's funny. It's
sort of, that's no problem. Are you getting important messages?
I'm not even checking.
It's sort of isn't Jumbo, I haven't been to Jumbo's Clown Room.
But I have not either.
Isn't that place out here supposed to be similar?
I think at one time it was, but from what I have heard, they've kind of upgraded. They've become like a real...
Because they got so popular and then they...
I think so.
Novelty LA thing, and now they have a lot of money, so...
Exactly. So the people went for the irony, uh-huh. and that generated enough revenue for them to get out of being ironic and be become
well,
real.
That's really the American dream.
It really is.
To get out of the irony.
That is. That's why people come to Hollywood. I'm still here trying to get out of it.
Often find themselves steeped in it as a result.
Oh, man, that is so, that's so true. What else did I want to ask you? You still actively auditioning for commercials?
Yeah, it's...
and working in commercials?
Yeah, it's mostly what I do. I mean, I don't want to sound ungrateful, but it would have been nice if, you know... Because, you know, we're talking about people who we watch become very successful in their chosen fields in the entertainment industry. And, you know, I'm not the kind of person, I'm not jealous of people. I don't think, I should have had that.
Yeah.
I don't. I know it's kind of arbitrary and whatever. But, you know, when I first got here, you know, I got really lucky at first. And I was booking a lot of nationals. And then all my actor friends were like, man, you're getting all the net. And then, like, half of them now are, like, recurring on Siri, you know? And,
yeah.
Like, and they're doing way better. And I'm like, still, get the guy who gets nationals.
That's good, though. And you know as well as I do that tomorrow you could be the guy that's a regular.
Yeah, it's arbitrary. Well, you're right. But... since the writer's strike and sort of coupled with the economy crashing.
Yeah.
Like after that, and, you know, the business changed so much as far as, you know, now the known actors, they accept the offers that they didn't used to. So I don't get nearly as much opportunity theatrically to, you know, audition for pilots and all that stuff.
That sucks.
Yeah, it does suck.
I'm glad that I never did as well as you did. Not even close. I only... booked a few commercials that I'd even like that are even worth remembering to me, but it's fun when you do it, but it's just a completely unpredictable and stressful lifestyle because
it is,
especially with the evolution of media and the way that people watch stuff, because commercials become less and less important.
Well, and, you know, and our, I don't want to complain about this for too long, but, you know, our contracts, our union contracts are so outdated.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, in the 80s, you booked a national and you were set for a couple of years.
Yep.
Now you book a national and you're lucky, one, if it airs.
Yeah.
Because now they, you know, shoot 47 commercials for one product at once and then they pick three of them.
Yeah.
So it's like you're still in an, it's like getting a pilot, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know if it's going to go. Who knows? If it goes, yeah, I might make some money. But I mean, even now they, you know, run commercials for a cycle or two and then that's it. Whereas they used to air them for a couple of years.
Do you you have a movie though, right? You have a movie coming out.
Yeah, it's a indie picture called Fuzz Track City.
Did you write it?
I did not. Did I it's funny, my friend Hicks, Steve Hicks, who wrote and directed it, and it's really, you know, he did a Robert Rodriguez on this thing. You know, he wrote it and financed it, and it's like his El Mariachi, I guess. But he we started because we wanted to do something together, and we just had this character name Murphy Dunn, and we were trying to work together as writers, and we were trying to write an inverted Christmas carol. We wanted to make a Christmas movie.
Oh, okay.
So it was like about a poor Scrooge instead of a rich one, and we got to and the guy's name is Murphy Dunn, and we called it The Season of Murph, and we got like 20 pages into the script, and in this scene, the main character is giving a rim job to a crackhorn in an alleyway. And I looked at him and I said, "This doesn't seem like it's working out."
At least you had the presence of mind to stop it right there.
And he was like, "I totally agree."
So did he just take over and write?
It was kind of our... Compromise is a different sort of beast. I mean, I think with entertainment, you know, especially with movies, to me, I mean, I think TV, you have to have a staff because of the, you have to, there's so much output you have to do. You cannot do that by yourself. How Louis C.K. does it,
it's insane.
I have no idea. I have no idea. He just must spend all his time on that show when he's producing it.
Yeah.
But in any event, I mean, I think a staff in TV makes sense. But with movies, because it's a finite thing, the more people you have involved, the lesser the movie is. I think it's a better thing if it's a writer, the writer director is the same person.
Yeah, if possible.
If possible.
Yeah, I think that it applies to, I think it does apply to TV in a way where the more people that want to change stuff, everyone wants to put their little stamp on it. And a lot of times it dilutes it, especially if you don't have someone strong enough to stand up to stuff that's clearly wrong,
yeah,
or just in the wrong direction, or just it's going to make something else not funny. But
yeah, well, he was good. You know, Steve was really good on the set too. Of adjusting,
he directed it, wrote and directed.
He wrote
and
directed,
in it too,
and cut it. No, he's not in it. Oh. He's not really an actor. I mean, he's, you know, will do like cameos and things. He thinks it's fun, but he's not.
Are you the main person? What's
I am the guy.
You're the dude.
I'm Murphy.
I gotta
Dunn,
go see this.
The private detective. Yeah, you should. It's June 4th, which is a Monday, 7:15 at the Man Chinese 6. Dances with Films is. Yeah. Have you ever heard
of? Yeah.
They're like they've been around for a while now, but
that's,
know,
pretty cool.
Small,
I mean,
small movies.
You have a movie at Man's. It's pretty
awesome.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really excited.
And I'm assuming it's a comedy.
It is a comedy. I mean, that's the thing. It's hard to describe. Steve is very, his stuff is very specific and it's very poppy. But he's obsessed with the 70s.
Yeah.
So basically my character is basically a man out of time. I mean, it's not like a high concept. He was in the 70s and then suddenly he's now. He's just sort of, he was brought up by an old school detective. So he acts that way. He acts like he's a 70s guy. He's got like long rocker hair and, you know, a soul patch and all this stuff.
Oh, cool.
He doesn't even have a cell phone.
He just, you know, he just lives the way he knows how to live.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's funny, but I think it's also exciting and intense and all that stuff.
Are you happy? Do you see you've seen the end result?
Just about.
And you have no problem watching yourself, I'm sure, I would assume, on TV.
I go back and forth. You know, sometimes sometimes I'm like, oh, that, you know, like at first glance, I'll go, yeah, that was good. And I've seen multiple cuts of this movie, so I've gone back and gone, ah, oh, geez, what am I doing? Yeah. What am I doing? This is terrible because I'm on screen for most of the movie, and if I suck, that's a problem.
That's stressful.
Yeah, it is stressful. And commercials, I do it too. It's like commercials, I'm like, because, you know, I mean, you've done commercials, you know, you always get the direction, you know, don't do anything.
Yes.
And then I'll see myself not doing anything and be like, oh my God, this is horrible. I look like a zombie. There's nothing going on.
Which is what they want.
Which is what they want. But I, you know, it
people will project onto you too. If your face is doing nothing, they'll project whatever they want, whatever emotion they want or think they see onto you.
Yeah. Yeah.
The less you do, the more.
I that's true. But, and that's certainly the trend in acting these days.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, you know, shit all over any movie stars, but there's a number of examples in my head right now.
Of people who do nothing.
Of people who do nothing. And and it's like, to me, it's bland. Mm-hmm. You know, I prefer, I don't want over the top performances necessarily, although it's fun to watch a good actor chew scenery.
It is.
You know, like Gary Oldman, if you let him go, it's just fun to watch.
Or John Malkovich.
Malkovich, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Even Kevin Spacey.
Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise.
These theater actors, you know.
Yeah, And to me, and also when those guys are doing subtle performances, there's a lot going on. It's not, I think that it gets translated poorly. You know, mm-hmm. We don't want you to do anything. What they don't want you to do is act poorly.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly, you're right.
It's a movie. It's not a stage, so you have to keep it small. But that doesn't mean do nothing.
No.
Although sometimes that literally is what they want you to do.
Yeah.
But I think people do project, which is the power of human imagination. But I prefer a guy who's actually doing something.
Do you believe in acting teachers?
I do.
You think acting teaching can work? Do you think like you can be taught how to act? I was talking about this the other day. That's why I'm asking. Because I don't think you can be taught how to act well. I think you can be taught timing. Comedy, like on stage timing. But I don't think that acting teachers have ever helped someone become much better. I could be wrong. That's just one opinion. But I feel like the whole industry is a fraud. I do.
Well, I wrote a book called Don't Act, 101 Reasons Why You Shouldn't.
And oh, you did?
There's several chapters in there about acting teachers. And I said the main lesson that any acting teacher should impart on their students is this business has ultimately, you know, as far as making it, has nothing to do with talent, draw. It's luck. It's luck.
Yeah.
But if acting teachers tell their students that, most of them are probably going to quit.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean? So you can't, as an acting teacher, you can't be horribly honest about the business. Otherwise, you won't have any students.
Don't you think it would be so much more valuable, don't you think it would be a better use of time if an acting class taught you how to walk into an audition room and talk to people without, like, looking like you're like a really desperate or because you have probably been on have you done stuff where you've gotten to cast people and seen people come into audition ever
in well for this movie
so you got to read with them or see
them.
Yeah,
I was there for the whole audition
and the
process.
Second they walk in, you know, a lot of times, you know, okay, this person will not be able to do this because
right.
They're nervous right now here, so what are they going to do when the camera's on them if they can't like deliver
right.
something right now.
Well, I mean, I was a little bit more sympathetic to nerves in the audition room because I know personally as an actor, and maybe this is why, you know, my career path has been, you know, kind of on one level for a while is, you know, I'm really not very good at that.
Yeah, me either.
The audition room thing.
And commercially, I am. Because I don't care about them as much.
Well, that's the trick.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the trick is if you don't care, but you're not, I mean, people hear that and then they go, well, I'm going to go in an audition room with an attitude. Like, I don't give a shit. It's not that.
It's no, it's like, genuinely not being, it's just another day.
Yeah, you're just there, you're here and it's, you might as well have fun sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't need this job. I'm just here in case you need my help.
Right.
Sort of.
Right. Here's what I do. If you'd like to hire me to do that, I will be available to do it.
Yes.
Otherwise, I have to get somewhere else.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, certainly with this movie, because it's a smaller movie, and you know, we're just having an open call pretty much, and it, you know, wasn't established actors. I mean, that can be very nerve-wracking if you don't get a lot of opportunities. Mm-hmm. I see people who are nervous in commercials all the time, and I have to remind myself, well, maybe they have never auditioned for a commercial
That's
before.
True.
Or maybe they only get two commercial auditions a year, so it matters. You know,
yeah.
I'm lucky enough that I go out not as much as when I was younger because, you know, I'm old and worthless now. but I still go out enough where it doesn't feel like it means that much to me. But I have to play that psychological game with myself with theatrical stuff because that doesn't come.
It doesn't work that for me.
It doesn't come as often.
I could never. Well, this, I mean, I don't. It's, I could talk about it forever. It's I'm sure it's boring, but yeah.
The point is what.
I could never get as comfortable on TV stuff or film stuff as I am commercially. Even pretending, doing everything. And honestly, I think it's because I wanted that so much more.
Yeah.
I really, television was what I really moved here to do. And commercials is kind of doing television.
Mm.
You get it, you know, it's like a 30-second movie. It's a 30-second short film.
Yeah.
Especially a good one where you get to do a funny bit, but TV just always, for me, was like the ultimate goal. So every time I go into a TV audition, I'm thinking, oh my God, what if happened? What do I get this?
Yeah.
What if I get to do this?
Yeah. I could never, because people were, I don't know, you know, like I used to test all the time, network tests all the time, and I could never get a handle on being cool at those things.
But you got to the test. That's amazing.
Yeah. But I never booked a series regular role. Not a one.
Well, you got to the test.
Yeah, that's true. I got to the test. Yes. Yes. I'm just this side of a big time winner. Yes.
Do people, when you do this, always want to talk about acting with you? Does it come up all the time in this?
No.
This
no.
Ground that's been covered?
No. No. I did one podcast where a guy talked to me about landscaping for a half hour.
What about you have one child?
I do.
You enjoy parenting?
Oh.
I wish people could have seen the reaction to that.
I guess I'm a little Louis C.K.
Yeah.
As far as parenting's concerned, I love my son. You know, it's one of those things. You know, he's six and he's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And yes, there are those moments where, you know, the love is unconditional. The
yeah.
parenting, so there's something to that bond, but it's expensive.
There's something to the whole parenting bond. There is
something
there.
To that, and it is nice, but there's so much. It's like, all right, this is my. I had a teacher in high school. And I was, you know, we were close because she directed the plays, and I, you know, had this relationship with this girl, you know, and she's given me relationship advice, and she said, well, you know, you should write out a list of the pros of being with this girl and the cons, right? And if their cons outweigh the pros, then maybe it's not a good relationship. And I think with parenting, there's no way that your list of cons is going to be less than your list of pros. There's like two or three pros and like 49, 50 cons. But it's the only kind of relationship in, you know, human living, I think, that pros are so good that they do make all the cons worthwhile.
So you don't ever, obviously, no one would ever admit to regretting having a child, but there.
Well, you have how many?
I have three.
And
two I intended.
So, but you have no regrets?
No, as a matter of fact, I think I did it perfectly. Not the three. The two is the ideal number. Three's going to be fine, but two would have been perfect. Oh man, I hope she never listens to this, because I love her so much. But no,
well, it's you're talking logistics. Yes.
Logistically, two is easier because you get one. There's a team, and one person on each team gets one of the kids. So anyway, the thing to do before having kids is make sure you have a good, happy marriage for a while,
and that's huge.
And because what happens is, I was just talking about my wife about this, is that you become married to your kids after they're born.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, like, your wife is just someone you high-five every now and then on the way past each other while you're taking care of the kids. At least with three. Maybe with one, it's not as drastic.
I would imagine the numbers increase that thing. But you also, I mean, even with one, I mean, that's true.
It's true.
You know?
You should go travel and do a lot of shit before you have kids, because it is over. Oh,
yeah, if you can afford it, yeah.
Yeah, or even just travel to Pacoima, you know, or go to San Bernardino.
Yeah,
Go to that monster truck rally. Go to the...
Yeah.
Do these things.
Yeah, go to those sex clubs in San Bernardino after the truck rally.
Oh, God, those must be horrible places. The San Bernardino sex club. That is worse than a strip bar in New Orleans.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah, that's, for me... It is very rewarding, but at the same... The thing that's hard about it for me and is there's no vacation mm-hmm. from it, really. You, even if you're not, even if you're out of town, you're still dad. And that's, you know, and people leave. Certainly lots of fathers go, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
Not that I'm special for not doing that, I don't know. It's such a responsibility.
It is. It's a lifelong.
And I'm a goof. I mean, I'm a goof, you know? And I'm always kind of struggling with that. You know, that's my inner struggle, is I'm essentially, you know, a 16-year-old douchebag, but I'm now actually 40 and have a kid, so I'm like... How do I balance this out?
You know? I think it's everybody's struggle. I don't think there's anybody that feels like they are ready, that they're a parent.
Yeah.
I would hope not.
Well, when my wife wanted a baby, and I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. And, you know, she basically said, you're not going to be ready for this. But if we don't do it, I'm going to go find somebody else who will.
Okay.
And I was like, okay. So yeah, I guess you're never ready for it, and you screw up, but
yeah, you do. But it's tough when you screw up, even when they don't know about whatever screw up you did or whatever, because the thing you always think is like, I'm a father. I can't do this. I can't live like I'm in college anymore. I can't do stupid shit and get my head smashed into the concrete on a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah,
but. Fuck it.
Yeah. Well, no, but the fact is you have to have that time. Somebody on Twitter, you know, somebody I followed who clearly doesn't have kids, you know, because a lot of people who have kids make jokes about kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, Louis C.K. basically his whole career at this point is like that frustrated parent thing. And somebody wrote that, you know, if you don't want to spend time with your kids, maybe you shouldn't have kids.
Oh, God.
In response to somebody saying, I need to get away from these children.
Yes.
You know, and I said, if you're saying that, you clearly don't have kids.
No.
It doesn't mean you don't love them.
You've never even been around kids.
Yeah, they're you need to get away from kids.
You will die if you don't.
That's why we have jobs. That's the main reason that our society has created jobs, so you can get away from the kids.
It's the reason why traditional roles are so good for me, because I could never be a stay-at-home. I could never be a stay-at-home dad.
My friend Jesse Birch.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And he loves his kids and he's so good with them. But when I talk to him about it, he's like, "That's so fucking exhausting.
It is hard.
It's so exhausting." And you can tell when he's had a bad day because he looks like the kids beat the crap out of him, you know. But then when he's with him, it's this. I mean, I think it's classic when you're with your friends, you complain about your kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess some people at cocktail parties are like, "Well, my son's doing quite well," and it's like a one-up.
But they're
thing,
lying.
But they're lying.
Yeah, they're all lying.
Real parents go, you know. Honest people go, "No, it's driving me nuts." But when you see them with their kids, they're completely different people.
Right.
Because they love their kids.
Of course, everyone loves their kids.
Yeah.
Well, most people love their kids.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, not everybody. I don't know if the Kardashians are loved.
You don't think so?
No, I don't know.
I don't
Maybe.
Know. Maybe. I don't like them.
No? I've never met them.
I don't care
them.
About them, actually. I just don't. I'm indifferent about the Kardashians.
Yeah,
it's indifference.
Yeah. It's important to be indifferent.
There's some people on Twitter that hate the Kardashians, that they make their living just making fun of the Kardashians, which seems kind of easy.
Yeah, that is easy. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, one of the things that bugs me about Twitter is people are quick to jump on a bandwagon of kicking someone when they're down.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, like actually undercutting somebody who's kind of beloved but aren't really doing a good job.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there is a fear of taking on anything that that everyone else seems to like, just in case you start making people upset about it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like religion. You can't really cut. You can't really take shots at it without pissing off, even though they really.
Well, for me, it's like I will take shots at religion.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a freedom of religion guy, but I also think religion's stupid, and I'm honest about that. But if you want to be religious, I say go for it. Mm. I mean, I have a lot of friends who are religious, but I will tell them I think your religion is dumb.
And you, and I sometimes think you're dumb too. Just for believing in it.
Yeah. So I don't care about Twitter. If people unfollow me because I make some crack about Catholic priests.
Oh, you don't want them following you anyway.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
It's weird. I just started a second Twitter account as my fictional character in the movie just to try and find ways to get, because we don't have an advertising budget. It's like, come on, come to this show, guys. We're putting on a show.
Murph says.
Yeah, exactly. So it's. But I forgot that when you start a Twitter account, like you get followed by two kinds of weird spam bots. And one is, you know, this sex ones where it's like a link to hugecocksandcoeds.com or whatever.
Right.
And then the other one is like extreme right wing, like Tea Partier.
Oh,
accounts.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It's so weird.
What are they doing just blindly following?
I don't know. I mean, it's like... It's
like a cult, though.
One is called like Toughen Up America Twitter account, and it followed me. I was like, I think America could toughen up a little bit. And then I looked at their feed, and it was like, I was like, I can't. No, why are you following me? What about this account made you think that, you know, I'd be cool with this? It's very strange.
Twitter. What else? What's next for you? What's next? What question do you hate answering the most as small talk? What have you been up to? That's one of the worst.
What have you been up to? And well, for when you're an actor too, the thing that I just saw you yesterday. And
it's like a commercial from 3 years ago.
I hate that.
Because you think that. Like, really, are they running it again?
Yeah, oh, cool, sweet. And it's like, no, no.
No, maybe it was the Super Bowl of last year.
That's the thing about commercial acting too, is people always go, oh, hey, I saw you on that, what was that thing where you were washing a car? It was that's a Liberty Mutual. Yeah, I saw that. And then that's it. It's not like, you know, that was great.
There's no possible response from you.
So we've established that you saw that commercial. That's excellent.
I also saw it.
But the other thing, I guess, that bugs me is that, you know, is so what do you got lined up?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm a blue collar actor guy. I've got nothing lined up, and I'll call me at 7:30 and I'll tell you what my appointment schedule's like for tomorrow. And if I book something, I'll let you know. But what do I have lined up? I have nothing.
Nothing. No plans to you have this? This podcast is how old?
The Toncast started in November. This is,
Do you like it?
I do. I enjoy it. Well, it's an excuse to talk to people I like.
Yeah.
One, and record it, and it's kind of fun to listen back, and I learn things about myself.
Oh, that's cool. It's like blogging almost, but you're saying it out loud.
But it's better because blogging is, you know, writing is such a solitary thing. And getting together and yammering.
You have more control writing, too, because you can sit and think and figure out exactly how you want to word something. I'm much more comfortable writing than talking because I have such control over it. And I can craft a perfectly worded thing. Or not perfectly, but to me, perfectly.
The way you want it.
The way I want it to sound and read. And
yeah, it's way harder to just talk and try and make sense.
It is.
Yeah, it's way harder to do that. But, you know, I figure so many people are, you know.
I know.
I mean, it's so easy.
It's easy. It's fun. And why not make something? Why not just make something and see what happens?
That's actually my main thing. I mean, it's like as far as, You know, because, you know, an outsider could look at me and go, well, I guess, you know, things didn't work out exactly the way you wanted. Huh? It's just kind of a failure thing, but...
Do you think so?
A little bit, but...
I don't think that might be...
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't... Yeah, I mean, I would rather be here, maybe, but I'm here, and, you know, and I keep going, and I keep doing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and the cool thing about, like, this... Like doing a podcast is it's relatively inexpensive and it's something I can do. And I write, you know, and that's something I can, I never stop doing stuff.
So that, yeah, I fully agree with that. But I want to just talk about that thing you just said because I think everyone here, it seems like maybe everyone in life, but definitely everyone here, no matter where they're at, is that mentality of like, I'm here, but I wish I was there.
Yeah.
That doesn't ever end. That's never ended for me as long as I've been here from when I was a bellman at a hotel in Century City and got one audition a year or two auditions a year. And to even after you start booking jobs and you're like, oh, this is, I can do this. This will be easy. I'll just do a couple of these a month. And that doesn't happen. And then nothing else happens for a while. And you start to think like, fuck, I wish I was where all my successful friends are.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's just as many people that look at your career and go, fuck, like that. Yeah. I would love that. I would love to work as much as,
he has
and does.
Well, but that's the thing about, you know, being an actor. I mean, and famous, you know, famous people too. I mean, they fall out of favor. Some guys and some ladies stay there the whole time and they're just evergreen. But other people, you know, they're suddenly gone, you know.
They're gone or there's...
Or they get screwed by something. Like
yeah, or they're stuck in something they don't like doing. They're stuck on a show they don't like or... I would imagine it never ends. The trick is to try to figure out how to be happy wherever you're at.
Yeah.
And it is a trick.
Well, I think this brings us back to marijuana and scotch.
That is a great way to be happy wherever you are.
Wherever and whoever you are.
I haven't tried the e-pot, the electronic pot.
Oh, the e-cigarette pot?
Yeah.
I was talking to a guy at that party we were at who told me. I didn't even know they did that.
Yeah. I have friends that swear by it.
It's kind of expensive, though.
Is it? I don't know.
I mean, it's like for the battery, you know, that heats up the cartridge that you put. It's like $100.
Oh.
And then I think the cartridges are like.
The battery is $100. Is it rechargeable?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. They're rechargeable.
But then you get like little like pot juice or pot oil or what is it like?
Well, I haven't even seen the electronic. I mean, electronic cigarettes.
And is
I
it
think
like
it's basically the same
liquid?
Thing. You get there's like a little cartridge and it looks like a cigarette filter, and you screw it onto the battery, and inside it are some liquid in the case of e-cigarettes with nicotine in it, and the battery heats it up and creates a vapor which you suck into your lungs and then you blow out, and it looks somewhat like smoke. And I imagine that the pot cigarette's the same thing, except
you get high.
It's THC instead of nicotine.
And then everything seems fine.
Yeah, everything's great.
And you're happy with where you're at in your life and
you start
being a parent.
And you start doing a podcast.
I think I'm going to start doing a podcast.
You should do a podcast.
I think I might. That's what Christian Duguay, who's in the office next door, and I had the same sort of feeling. Like, yeah, everyone's doing it, and it's kind of a joke that everyone's doing it, but why not? Why? Who cares? Why not?
Yeah, who cares? It's
shit.
Fun.
Look what Dave and Greg turned their podcast, Walking the Room, into.
Yeah.
Like going to Australia and performing live. And
yeah.
They have fans.
Yeah.
And merch.
Yeah.
What would the Slindog Podbean.com merch be?
That's a solid question.
It's not a good one. We could just, let's just not answer it. A hat. Maybe a hat or a roots bag.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, electronic pot cigarette.
Well, then you can
have... With just my face on it or something.
You should really do that. I really feel like you'd pull in a whole new audience if you just really appeal to the stoner crowd.
That's a good idea.
It is.
I may never have to pay for pot again if I do that. Sounds all right.
Fuck, how long do these things go? Should I keep going?
I don't know how long have we been.
53 minutes.
Holy mackerel!
Is that too long?
No. Usually they average an hour. Sometimes they go hour 20. I had my son did one, which was 2 minutes long.
Did he interview you?
Yes, it was very fun.
Did he ask you about being a parent?
No.
Let me tell you, kids are fucking. These kids are pains in the ass.
I wish he had.
What did he ask you?
He asked me what I would do if I got tangled up in a swing on the playground.
That's amazing, because that to him is probably like the worst thing that could happen.
He really wanted to know how I would get out of it. And then I said, well, you know, I would call for help. And he's like, well, what if nobody can hear you, you know? And it's like, well, I'd get out my cell phone. And he kept coming up with more obstacles. And I was like, well, I'd call your mom and get her to come. And he's like, well, what if your wife showed up and she was terrified and then ran away?
That makes it very clear to me that my problem with kids is that I think that they're thinking on the same level I am, when their biggest fear is like getting tangled in a swing and no one can come find them.
That is kind of a thing with kids, because I always, before I had a kid, I mean, now that I had a kid, I understand children way more than I
do. Oh, yeah.
Because like I used to, I've been playing a young dad way before.
Before you
were
even.
I was actually a dad. And I always was awkward around the children. They would make me somewhat nervous.
I've definitely found that is one great thing about having kids, is that you do know how to behave around them. And like you said, like I'd get paired up with a kid and not even know. I didn't even like, nice to meet you. Like I treated him like an adult.
That, and I'd talk to kid. I would talk to 2 year olds. Like you know, you want me to get you a juice, man?
Man. Hey, bro, you good or? I think they have chips if you're hungry.
Not unlike Seth Rogen's character in Knocked Up, I guess.
Oh yeah, that's true.
But now I know how to talk to kids. It's very exciting.
You ever get high and then realize like that, like you really can understand the wavelength that your kid is on? Because that happened to me a couple times where I saw, like I could see the way that his brain was working, like, and just even taking the world on at that level is totally different. You're like 3 feet tall. Everything you see is a lot different than everything I'm seeing. It's weird.
Yeah. It's easier to get yourself in that place if you've smoked marijuana.
That's what I'm saying.
But
the problem is then you're stoned around your kids.
Yeah. Well, as long as, you know, as long as mom's straight.
Yeah. What's the big deal? You're not driving anywhere.
You just got to plan these things out. But yeah, totally. I've done that on the weekends. I've had a little afternoon hit and then played Legos for 3 hours with my kid. It's awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It is. It's so much easier to just play the games that sometimes you find yourself like, oh, I don't want to play fucking Candyland again. I'll do it, but I don't want to.
I don't want to play Candyland no matter what I'm on. I don't like that game.
No, it's a bad game.
It sucks.
Bad example. But there's another game called Chutes and Ladders that
one's better.
That's a little bit better. But any game I'll play. That sounds terrible. I was way more interested in my children when I was still. It's not true.
No, I totally know.
I just understand their wavelength better. Like, yeah. I get their kind of what they want, which is most of the time they just want to hang out with you.
Well, pot. The thing about pot is, you know, everything in moderation.
Yeah.
You know, but the whole point is to open up your mind and make you understand things about the world that you had, and so that actually makes sense.
It does.
You're high and you see the kid and you're watching the kid and you're like, oh my God, I get this.
I see what he wants.
Yeah.
I see what he's doing.
Yeah. It's the same, you know, it's the same thing as, you know,
the flavors.
We can travel through space. I understand children. It's the same, a consciousness opening experience, I would say.
That's all I have for you. 57 minutes.
That's a good RT.
Thanks for coming to the Toncast. Thanks for coming to the Toncast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I don't think we'll do it again because it's a kind of a one-time deal.
Yeah, well, here. you know what I do is I ask. We're really breaking down the fourth wall right now. Are there fourth walls in audio?
There's no walls.
Broadcasts or I usually I've had people do it more than once, and they just work under an assumed name.
Oh, interesting.
So you know, we could do that.
For all anyone knows, maybe this is like my third time doing it.
Yeah, they don't know.
No.
They don't know. It's I guess it's comedy bang-bangy in a certain way.
Was this the most boring one that you've ever done?
People always ask me that, and I have yet to find one that I think is boring. Yeah. I cannot speak for anybody who listens.
Well, I couldn't commit to like a character because I didn't plan ahead enough to do that, and so I just figured. And plus, I just don't. I think if I was trying to be funny, it wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it would be, but then if it isn't, if it's a miss, then you're just.
Well, not a ton of people have done characters. A few people have, and I've enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But I also enjoy the conversation. I mean, I had to talk a friend of mine. Deb Barilsky, who's a casting director, I had to talk her, and she was like, she listened to one, which was like, because some of the people are actual on camera or on stage entertainers, so they're doing a bit on some level, and other people have, but she just happened to hear a couple that were that, and she's like, oh no, I can't do that. I'm not doing a funny. I'm not going to do this. I'm not the right person. And I was like, you don't have to do. You just listen to the funny ones. But there are other ones, and they all wind up having humor in them, obviously. But there are other ones that are just conversations, which is
like this
I
one.
Like it. Yeah, and this is a conversation one. I like it.
Fuck! I hope this recorded.
Oh, did it crash?
No, it worked.
Oh, okay, good.
Want me to stop it? Is there an ending? Is there an outro?
Well, there's music, but yeah. So, we already kind of signed off, and then we kept talking.
Oh, so you can cut it anywhere.
I could, yeah.
Cue the music.
But
what else? That's it.